And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is your Tampa Bay Rays RBLR podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I am your host, Pat Davenport. I am the host now, by my co-host, Zach Dab, because he was muted and I got to do the intro. Zach, how's it going? I heard there was some kind of special celebration on your side of the Atlantic Ocean.
There was. And it was a very enjoyable celebration for me this year. Spent some time with family, ate some good food, got to walk. We went to this place in Savannah, Georgia, where they have, it's just this rich guy. I don't remember his name. Like Kessler, I think is his name. The super rich guy. And he just has this building. And in this building, there's just like a bunch of fossils and a bunch of like geodes and ammonites and stuff. And it was like really cool. And it was like totally free to go in. So it's not really relating to anything Thanksgiving related, but I did that over the weekend. And that was a lot of fun. And I just thought I would tell you about it because I really like geodes and fossils. And there's not a lot of call for geode and fossil talk on a Rays podcast. But
no, now you get to hear about it. I think you can, if you have the right rock to bring in, you can actually trade it in and they'll give you a Kranidos. I think that's what I've heard.
And you know what's, funny is there was actually a fossil at the entrance that had a like prehistoric like ray in the middle of the fossil. Maybe I'll find a way to like post it on social media or something. But it's really, really cool. If you're ever in Savannah, Georgia, you should go and go to this place. On the Savannah Bay over there. It's really neat.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, something that's turning me into what feels like a fossil is this phase of the MLB offseason. I think this is like the worst part where like the 40-man rosters have kind of set themselves for the offseason. And then all the free agents then take a while to like do anything, and therefore that holds up like the trade market as well. So like things are going to go at a snail's pace for like probably till around like mid to late December,
yeah,
before things start really kicking into high gear, before they actually turn the stove on, unless you're particularly moved by Ryan Helsley going to the Orioles.
Which you might be. And if you are, then you're just the kind of person that should be watching this show who is a sicko, yeah, who just loves baseball. And we welcome all the sickos into the podcast. Mm-hmm. If you are joining us for the first time, thank you for joining us. We got a jam-packed show for you. Even though it's the offseason, even though you would think there's not much to talk about, we got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about the one move that was made this week that is pretty significant and does impact the 2026 roster in a big way, most likely. And in addition, we're going to be doing a player review for several of our big infield guys. As you know, if you've been following this team, a lot of the thump in the offense comes from the infield. We're going to be talking about that today. If you are a return viewer, we appreciate you coming back. And if you do, it's a huge favor, drop us a subscribe or a follow. Helps us out. It's free. It just really helps us out and helps get us out into the universe for more people to enjoy. So hope you'll do that if you've enjoyed. So we're going to jump right into it, though, because we've got a lot to talk about. And we're going to start with a piece of news that was a little surprising, and that is that the Rays went out and re-signed Jake Fraley after allowing him to leave earlier and him electing free agency. They picked him back up.
Yeah, it's been a busy offseason for Jake Fraley because he got dumped off the 40-man. The Rays claimed him on waivers and then dumped him from their 40-man and now signed him again. They've signed him to a major league deal. It is a major league deal. And it's for $3 million. And with the option for it to go up to, I think, $3.4 million based on the amount of days he spends on the active roster is the big thing. So it's an incentive-laden deal. It's less than what he would have earned, well, was projected to have earned via arbitration. So that's something that the Rays probably considered when they dropped him. They were like, could we sign him to a real deal for less than the arbitration fee? Consider the if he meets all the incentives, it'll be $0.2 million less. Yeah. And maybe they'll go, wouldn't you rather just not go to arbitration? And have it hanging over you and earn a little less. It's an interesting move because Jake Fraley, we talked a little bit about him when we picked him up, is that he is cosmically average. He is the most average baseball player in the major leagues right now, maybe. Like, Graves is a perfectly average corner outfielder. You wouldn't want him in center field. He's like got slightly above average speed. Is pretty decent at drawing walks. Doesn't hit for much power. Will probably hit you somewhere between a 90 and a 110 WRC plus with so-so defense and speed. Like, it's so average, but that might be what the Rays need right now.
And I think that's a key piece of this, is that average should not be interpreted in this context as a bad thing. That this is a feature, not a bug. We were talking about this before we went live here. He has both a low floor and a low ceiling, or excuse me, his floor is relatively high and his ceiling is relatively low, but where they average out to is, again, league average. But as we've seen over the last year, we've had a bunch of guys who are high ceiling. We thought some of them had low floors, and we found out they didn't. We found out they had much lower floors than what Jake Fraley has. And that's what we basically dealt with all last season. And it was different players had different aspects of a low floor. Some of it was a low floor defensively. Some of it was a low floor offensively. Some was a low floor both. And what we've now brought in is a guy that could bring some stability there as a fourth outfielder, who I think the real conversation, you know, beyond what Jake Fraley brings to the table, which is that, you know, he gets on base at a decent clip, 330 roughly for him on base percentage. He has a, like, he's averaged a decent ISO actually around the, like, 180, 190 realm. And he has hit 15 home runs in seasons before. So there's a little bit of pop in the bat. He gets on base enough. So he's perfectly serviceable, like we were saying. But the real question becomes, what is the intended role for him on this team? And I think it's interesting that you mentioned that he could have potentially gotten more in arbitration, and which also makes me wonder if he could have gotten more somewhere else. And I don't know the answer to that. And it makes me wonder what his decision-making process was coming to the team and what they have told him they believe his role is going to be on this team. And I think you could infer, based on the fact of how much they're paying him, which is not, you know, not a lot of money, but it's more than what they're paying guys like Ryan Vallade, you know, like, so then the question becomes, is he now the potential backup for Josh Lowe if he doesn't make it happen? And, you know, another reason why you may think that is he's a lefty. Rez Vallade is a righty. So now I think there's a – to me, that's where my mind goes. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I essentially agree. I think he is going to be – I talked a couple of weeks ago that Ryan Vallade is going to have Josh Lowe on fraud watch if Josh Lowe is not working out. I think – while I think Josh Lowe is going to be the opening day right fielder, health permitting, I think if Josh Lowe does not, if he puts up the negative WAR that he put up this past season in the first 6 weeks of the season, he's done so. Jake Fraley's taken his role. I thought it was going to be Ryan Vallade doing that, and maybe it still would be, but I think Jake Fraley is now also in that mix as well. Mainly because I think Jake Fraley is like, if you put him in there, you know what you're getting more than any of the other options, like Palacios or Vallade. I don't think, or anyone like that. I think you know what you're getting from Fraley. It's a safe hand that will not necessarily make the team better, but it won't be actively hindering the team.
Yeah. And I think after last year, that's kind of something that the outfield in particular needs. We need some 100% not going to be a net negative player. We need some of that out in the outfield. And so obviously I think we all agree that we would have liked it to come in the form of someone a little bit more exciting with a little more upside than what Jake Fraley brings. But I can at least kind of get behind what they're doing here with Jake Fraley. And I think at this point, that seems to be the Rays solution to this problem, at least for now. Anything could happen if things, you know, evolve over, with the winter break, once the winter meetings happen, anything could happen, but it seems to be that that's kind of what their short-term solution is for the outfield.
Yeah. I think they seem like, unless an opportunity presents itself, I think they will run a Mangum, DeLuca, low outfield with Fraley. Yeah. As the fourth outfield to open the season. If one of them gets hurt, maybe Fraley moves in and Valade becomes the fourth outfielder. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It makes you wonder more about Palacios's role on the team. It also makes me, I know it's an outfield move, but I think it has implications for Carson Williams as well. I don't know if there's a way he can stick on the major league roster to begin the season. I don't know if they, I don't know.
But I think there's a really high probability right now that Simpson and Carson both start 2026 in AAA.
Yeah, I guess
it's a really high possibility.
Yeah, with Simpson, it really depends with how his fielding shows up in spring training and his walk rate, I think. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But
yeah, and I think I just think that there's not going to be enough data in spring training to get there.
I'm a little underwhelmed if this is how we set the outfield. I'm a little underwhelmed. And I'll tell you why. It's because the thing we're about to talk about is about to be so good. And the outfield, like, it feels like the ceiling for the outfield is pretty low.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that that's kind of the big frustration from 2025, I would say, overall, was just how good the infield was and how bad the outfield was. And I know that we've expressed thoughts on that. We'll continue to express thoughts on it. If you've got some thoughts on what we just talked about with adding Jake Fraley, if you've got some thoughts on the infielders we're about to discuss, and I know a lot of you do if you're Rays fans, do us a huge favor and drop a comment. Love to hear from you. Love to hear what your thoughts are, where your head's at going into 2026 for the outfield, what you expect from these infielders. We're going to get into what they did this last year. Let us know what you expect from them going into 2026. Easiest ways to hop on over to YouTube and drop a comment. And while you're there, if you're enjoying the show, drop us a subscribe. It really helps us out. So let's get right into then our infield player review. And let's start it off with a guy that we had big expectations for coming into this season. And maybe more than like anybody else in you know, other than Junior, absolutely crushed expectations and did exactly what we thought he would do. That's Jonathan Aranda. What a debut full-time season for Aranda.
Oh, it was outstanding. I know he was a common breakout pick, but yeah, he was absolutely outstanding. I mean, if you just look at the base numbers, a 316 average, 393 on base, 14 home runs, 489 slugging, that all comes down into a 146 WRC plus, which led the team.
Yeah.
Led the team, obviously, and was up there with the best in Major League Baseball. For a first full season in the bigs, that's pretty incredible. I guess the thing is, what makes Jonathan Aranda so good, Zach? Like, everyone picked him to be good, so they must have been seeing something. What was the thing that, like, all made us go, Jonathan Aranda is going to break out?
It's like, I don't know how to say this without making it seem so simple, but he's just a good hitter. He makes good swing decisions. He doesn't swing at bad pitches. He has great, great contact skills. He puts the ball in play. He has power. You know, like, it's one thing to be like a Luis Arraez type, right? Where you're just putting the ball in play. You have great bat to ball and it's just getting out there. But Aranda was last year, and I think will continue to be like a doubles machine. 22 doubles for Jonathan Aranda and 14 home runs for him last year. So the dude is hitting doubles, he's hitting home runs in addition to all the singles as well. And you know, his walk percentage is not like incredible. He's right around a 10% walk percentage. His strikeout rate was also higher than you might expect at 25%, but the dude is just putting it in play. 316 batting average. Like, he's just a great hitter, and he will take his walks, you know, from time to time. But what he's really going to do is try to find his pitch and put a good swing on you. He's going to work an at bat. A lot of times doesn't always end in a walk with him because, like we said, that walk percentage is a little bit low. But he will work an at bat. He will get to his pitch, especially earlier in the season, towards the end, kind of right before his injury. He was pressing a little bit, and we started to see him kind of swinging really early in the count. But especially early in the year, he was letting the game come to him and using those bat to ball skills, those plate discipline skills, and it was everything we had seen from him at the minor leagues translated to the major leagues. And, you know, like you mentioned, he's not been a defensive liability this last season. And that was the key thing for him, to just show up and not be a liability. He's done that, and he's cemented himself as an everyday starter.
Yeah. More than that. I mean, he could be an all-star most years. Yeah. I think he's going to be in the mix. I mean, I remember it was a big kind of hipster campaign amongst MLB fans, not just Rays fans, of being like, Aranda's the good hipster pick over Vladdy to start the game at first base, the All-Star game. And he was absolutely deserving of that. I think my favorite thing about Aranda is none of it felt fake. And it's interesting because, like, none of it felt like it was overperformance, but his bat speed is actually really low. He hits the ball really hard. His average exit velo is really high. It's in the 94th percentile. His hard hit percentage is in the 96th percentile, and he's really good with his launch angles as well. But his bat speed, really low compared to the league. It's way lower than the rest of the league, in fact. Which is literally means that the way he is generating is because he's barreling the ball so much. His like hand eye is unbelievably good because he's always just getting the barrel on the baseball. So he doesn't need to swing as hard.
Yeah. He's got a very direct to the baseball swing, and it shows in the way that, you know, the ball, like you said, the ball comes off the bat with an exit velocity. And I think also just eye tests, which, you know, it definitely is not everything, but just watching him play game in, game out, that you can just see the dude mashes. And you know, I don't know that he's ever going to be a 30-40 home run guy. He might be a 20 home run guy, but he could be like a 30-40 doubles guy if he you know, continues to stay healthy and as he gets more and more acclimated to major league pitching. I just don't think there's a lot of holes in his game. There's not a lot of things to attack for opposing pitchers. He doesn't have these huge holes in his strike zone. He's going to put good swings on, you know, just about any pitch in the strike zone. But he's also going to know, because one of the things that's kind of interesting about him is he has a relatively low zone swing percentage at 65%. So he's even selective with pitches in the strike zone, trying to take advantage of pitches that are good, you know, good pitches to hit and that he knows he can do damage on. And when he does swing, he makes good contact. And that's what I think allows him to be so successful, you know, despite, like you said, the low bat speed, where he's not just swinging at everything and trying to, you know, and just because he believes he can make contact. He knows where his strengths are, and he makes good contact in those zones. And if it's not in where he thinks he's going to make good contact, he either fouls it off or doesn't swing.
Yeah, exactly all of that. Would you rather he tried to be, if he swung a little harder to where like he doesn't need to barrel it up as much to get extra base hits, but his average takes or his strikeout rate increases a bit? Or do you like this version? I love this version personally.
I love this version. I don't need anything different from him. We have home runs in the form of Junior Caminero and currently Brandon Lau and even Yandy Diaz. Like, we've got home runs there. If he can be an extra base hit machine, I'm good with that.
Yeah, hitting Aranda, like a Diaz, Aranda, and then Caminero and Lau is like, that's exactly how you draw up any start of a lineup. Like, yes, you could put that front four up against any front four in any lineup.
Absolutely.
And like, apart, like, you know, it's up there. I think it's better than the Yankees. Like, yeah, Judge is better than any of those four hitters, but like the things, people around Judge aren't that good.
No. Well, yeah, when you take that top four, I mean, it's the only teams that are like confirmed, like 100% better are like the Dodgers that have, because they have guys that have just done it for longer and have that experience. But just talent and ability that we've seen. And then there is some experience there with Yandy and Bilal, but it's a great 1-2 punch, righty lefty. And you kind of got, you got a young righty and a young lefty and an experienced righty and experienced lefty. So that's kind of neat.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to navigate that if I were a starting pitcher. Like, hello, welcome to the game. You've got the hardest, the most selective, one of the most selective hitters in the game in Yandy Diaz. So you've got your strike zone. You've got to be in the strike zone straight away. Then straight after that, you got a guy that likes to barrel it up and is also very selective in Johnny Aranda. And then if any of those get on base, watch out. Lau and Caminero are swinging for the fences, looking to bring him home. It's nasty. And you can't get comfortable because, like you said, it's righty-lefty, righty-lefty.
Right. And you could, even if you, and if you wanted to, you can also put a Chandler Simpson or a Jake Mangum somewhere in there for an extra on base guy that can be messing around in your head on the base path. So there's like, you can, like, the top half of the Rays lineup, as we'll discuss with Yandy and Bilal here in a sec, is very strong. And again, it's going to have to be for this team to get anywhere next year. They're going to have to continue this performance. So, you know, in that vein, you kind of already mentioned it, but do you feel like there's any chance for a regression for Aranda going into 2026?
There might be a small one. There might be a small one. Sophomore slumps happen to the best of guys, right? But I would still imagine him to be significantly above average as a hitter.
Yeah.
This might sound crazy, but I genuinely think the floor for Aranda might be like a 120 WRC plus.
Yeah.
Instead of like if he doesn't hit a 140, you kind of go, okay, fair enough. But I'd be very surprised if it was below 120 for sure.
Yeah. Well, and with the kind of the archetype of player that he is, he kind of can't afford to be hitting less than a 120 WRC plus. Cause then like, what are you doing? Like, what's your role on the team if you're hitting less than that? But I agree with you that there's no flashing red sign in his numbers. Everything is, you know, what we expected, what we envisioned going into the season is exactly what he was. And now it's just a hope that he can continue that. I don't think there's anything that pitchers are going to see in his game that they can really exploit. Like, they're going to make adjustments. They always do. But again, I think that would be more like maybe he comes down to a 135 WRC plus as opposed to a 146. Like, that's possible. Like, that's possible. But even if that's the case, then he's still going to be providing a lot of offensive value, and we're going to be really happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that looks in my head is, okay, he's got slow bat speed. Maybe we have to hit him in with really high velocity.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only game plan I can think of.
Which is easier said than done.
Yeah, you don't necessarily always have those guys ready to go.
Yeah, so, or you hit him and then now he's on first.
Yeah, that's the one thing. He did get hit and didn't lose a couple months to injury, which is a shame, really.
Yeah,
because I think he could have got to 20 home runs had he not missed that time.
He probably could have.
Yeah, he had 14 and with an extra 6 weeks, maybe could have got at least threatened it. So I just hope that's not like an injury where you go, oh, is he injury prone? That's just like, oh, that's a bad accident.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't even get worried about health, because getting hit is something that's kind of out of your control.
Yeah, and he hasn't had serious health issues previously. So nothing too concerning there.
I was a little concerned when it was like, I believe it was a wrist injury. And they can be really hard for hitters to come back from. But he didn't seem to miss a beat when he came back.
He was fine. When he came back, he was fine. Yeah, which was exciting to see. So all in all, if you were going to put a grade on Johnny Aranda's first full season with the team, what would you put?
It's impossible to not give him an A.
Yeah.
Like, he's threatening an A plus. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to give him an A just, I'm going to give him an A. Is he your A plus, or have you already given your A plus to Junior?
I gave my A plus to Junior. I think he had the potential to get an A plus if he finished out the season. But like, this is not his fault, because he got hit and he was injured. But if he just found a way to not be injured, you have to wonder, it's a huge what if, what happens at the end of this season if he's around in a part of these games. There's a lot of close games at the end of the season. A lot of games could have gone the other way with one more hit here or there. I just have to wonder like if he had been around, is there any scenario where the season ended any differently? And so that's not his fault, but it is a shame. And I can't give you an A plus if you only played 106 games. So it will be an A for him though, and it well deserved. And he's a guy that is like of the couple of guys that I think could win an A plus, he's in that group for next year.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he led the team in WRC plus again
next year. Very possible.
Love Jody Aranda. We talk a lot about a Caminero extension.
Yeah.
I know, like, obviously, but would you say that maybe it could be, if you can't get a Caminero extension done, is the Aranda extension the move?
I think it might be it would certainly be cheaper than a Caminero extension. And it might be one where if you don't feel like you're going to get anywhere else really in this offseason as far as additions, it might be a worthwhile use of funds to just go ahead and lock him up. Because again, I can't imagine there's anything that the front offices that we see or don't see, you know, in that, you know, him not being this good in the future. So I don't see any reason to you know, beat around the bush other than the fact that he is still not into his arbitration years and will not be until 2027. So I do think there's a world where they wait until next year and then sign him to an extension. Like I think it actually is totally possible that they wait until next year and then try to lock them both up, Aranda and Caminero, after next offseason. But we'll see. But again, I would not be mad at it. I think it'd be a good decision if they went ahead and tried to lock him up.
Yeah. I hope, I mean, like if we were a real baseball team with real money, it would have happened by now with both those guys.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think teams are, you know, are definitely like, I think most teams would lock him up next year. I think a lot of teams would still let him play out this year because he's not even on arbitration yet. But again, like, I think it's a scenario where if he plays well again, then it's like, let's reward him for the good play and lock him up, get him on a deal that like starts at a 7 maybe, or a 5, somewhere from a 5 to an 8, and grows up to like a 10 or 15, something like that over the course of maybe like a 6 or 7 year deal. That would be nice. Something like that would be nice.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if we were the 2019 Atlanta Braves, we would have been all over it. Well, we would have also signed like Jake Mangum to a extension as well, probably. But yeah, big A for Aranda. Impossible to give him anything lower, I think. Speaking of people that really performed, the guy that Aranda kind of usurped as the everyday first baseman kind of pushed this guy to a DH role, I suppose, now, which probably works out better for him at this point in his career. It's Yandy Diaz. And what a year Yandy Diaz had, Zach.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mentioned that, because he was markedly better this year than he was last year. 15 points of WRC plus better, a whole Fangraphs win better than last year. And I think it's totally possible that a part of that, some of it maybe was he had an amazing season the previous year and was coming down off of that. But I do think there's a very real possibility that he's on his feet less, and I think really grew into that DH role. And I think it's a really good fit for him, because he's a professional hitter. He's the kind of professional hitter in the vein that like people talked about Nelson Cruz when he was still good, where he's just a hitter. He's going to hit wherever he is. And he was fantastic this last year. Just continued to be up there with batting average, batted another 300 season for him, another on base season in really good spirits, up 20 basis points from the previous year, 366 for him this year, and slugged way better than last year at a 482 slug, which we love, ending in a 135 WRC plus for him, which again, 15 points better than the previous year and good enough for 2.9 F4, almost 3 F4. So yeah, a really nice bounce back season.
Yeah. And career highs in home runs and RBIs as well.
Yes.
25, like a 300 average with 25 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
Hello? Like that, I think Yandy Diaz has had one of the most slept on hitting seasons in baseball this year.
1,000%. I mean, again, like you just said, that's a crazy stat line. 25 home runs, 83 83 RBIs. At age, in his age 33 season, he's doing this. It's just very impressive.
Yeah, he is. I think the Nelson Cruz comparison is very, very good. I think it's apt. He, just continues to age gracefully, continues to be a pro hitter, grinds out at bats. That walk percentage, it's kind of creeping down from where it used to be.
Yeah.
Like when it was like 2022, 2023, even 2021. When he was like peak walking, he was the like Greek god of walks. It's now kind of like a little above league average now. But he is still hitting the ball really hard. He's still not chasing that much either. And he's not swinging and missing. He's really hard to strike out. He's still smacking the ball into the ground a lot. But he still smacks it really hard. So do you know what's really weird about Yandy Diaz?
What's really weird about Yandy Diaz?
He hit more opposite field home runs than he did to the pole side this year.
That's like, I feel like in my head, I can visualize that. Like just watching his home runs, really interesting. Really interesting.
Like if you imagine a Yandy Diaz home run, you see him hitting a laser that was like had like a 10 degree launch angle into the corner of Steinbrenner Field where the short porch was.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, I think we've got to be really careful about Yandy Diaz's power output going into next season. Because a lot of those that went out opposite field would not go out in the trop.
Yeah.
So if we see his home run totals drop from 25 to somewhere between 10 and 15, I wouldn't be alarmed.
Yes.
But I still think there's no real reason to be worried about Yandy Diaz other than he'll probably hit less home runs. You'd like him to start walking a bit more again if he's going to do that, though.
Yeah. So there was a pronounced shift in his game from the 2022 season to the 2023 season. In 2022, his walk percentage was higher than his strikeout percentage. So, which is crazy. Yeah. In 2023, that flipped from, it was previously a 14% walk percentage, 10% strikeout percentage. It flipped to a 10% walk percent, a little over, like it's like 10.8 walk percentage to like a 15% walk or strikeout percentage. And it kind of stayed that way going forward. It hasn't it even went down a little bit to an 8% walk percentage. Strikeout percentage stayed roughly right around the same area. So there was a pronounced shift there to, I'm going to swing a little bit more. And you know, if you look at his swing decisions, the swings are up a little bit. It's not dramatic, but they are up a little bit. And he's just swinging, you know, more generally speaking, and he's doing it every year. It's incrementally a little bit more every year. And again, I think he's just trusting his ability. He's just trusting his bat to ball skills and definitely took advantage of Steinbrenner. But I agree with you. It will come down a little bit in 2026. I'm gonna peg him right around 15, 16 home runs next year.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'd put him somewhere around give or take 15. And I think his WRC plus will probably sit around 130 again.
Yeah.
Which, hey, a 130 WRC plus DH that walks a lot. Cool. Let's run that back.
Because you're looking at that point, at least three, potentially four infielders all hitting above 130. And that is about as good as, like we were saying before, I'll run those guys out there with anybody in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think also Yandy is kind of evolved into the kind of de facto captain of this team.
I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Bilal's been around slightly longer, but I think Yandy is a more vocal presence in the locker room. I remember him and Randy had kind of tiffs in the locker room occasionally. And I think it's because Yandy makes himself heard and like wants people to play the game a certain way. And he is the guy that will tell you what you're doing wrong or like how you need to conduct yourself around the Rays team. And that has a lot of value. And Bilal is not that type of guy, and he doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
But it's good to have that kind of guy around.
And especially when you have a Caminero and a Ronda, even like a Mangum, some of these young guys, Chandler Simpson, having those guys up and around the team, and to have a true and true blue professional that is leading your team, that is not just like there as a figurehead, but is actively contributing and, you know, could on any given day be your best hitter, what, without question. Like, that is just an incredibly valuable person to have on your roster. Very glad that they had that option for him for this season, or the extension of his contract for this season. Very glad to have him back. And I don't know what will, you know, if he'll still be on the team at the end of 2026. I hope he will be. It'll be very interesting to see how the team handles it. I'm not sure what exactly his options are going to be going forward. He does have a club option in 2027, so he could remain with the team for, you know, that next season. But it's definitely some questions there. But I think he's earned the right to, even if his production were to dip a little bit, his value is such that I'd still like to have him around.
I'm going to say something crazy to you. If Yandy contributes to a 130 WRC plus-ish, maybe a bit better, this year and in 2027, is he the greatest hitter in Rays history?
We're just talking about hitter. Because Longo's is a more complete player from a defensive additional perspective, the value he provides at third. That's a really good question. I don't know that I could give you an answer. I think that's a question I have to think about a little bit more, to be honest with you. I think he is in the conversation. Like, you can have the conversation about that. Because at that point, that would be what? That would be 8 years of production with the team, all of which have been above a 110 WRC plus or higher every single year.
And the team's only batting title.
Yeah. And a silver slugger. I think it's definitely like the conversation can absolutely be had. And I think if we get there, you know, if we're doing this player review in 2026 and he's still with the team and he's had a great season, I'm going to say that we'll have that. That'll be a topic of conversation. Because when you start talking about 8 years with a franchise performing at that level, and then he would be in his age 34 season producing at that level, I think it's definitely a conversation worth having.
Yeah. It would be crazy to think that if he does 8 years with the team, that's flown by. That's absolutely flown by. I still remember where I was when I saw that Jake Bowers got traded, and
I do
was
too.
Upset about it. And I was like, why was I upset about us trading Jake Bowers for Yandy Diaz? Jake Fraley was in that deal, actually, I think. So I think he went to the Mariners in that deal. Do you know what I would personally like to have around for 8 years, because I know it'll do a similar job in terms of production for me?
You've got something of that kind of value that you'd like around?
I do. I know that's hard to come by in today's economy, but it's a t-shirt from rblrsports.com. Yeah, that's right. rblrsports.com have all of the best Tampa Bay team merchandise. They have your Rowdies, your Lightning, your Bucks, your Rays, your Sun, all in one convenient location. You can rep them with t-shirts, with caps, beanies, all that kind of good stuff. Rep Team Tampa Bay. It's the best thing to do. And you can use the promo code Flappy for 10% off. FLAPPY, 10% off your order. You should go to shop.rblrsports.com today. What better way to celebrate the holiday season?
Absolutely. You get one for yourself. Get one for your friends.
Your grandma. It's
a great holiday gift for your grandma. Maybe she wants a Sun shirt. Maybe she does.
See what happens when your grandma gets to bring back the Devil t-shirt. See what happens.
You never know. Yeah. That's kind of what the
conversation at the dinner table.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's kind of what a lot of us were hoping would happen with Brandon Lau this year, is we would get to see what would happen with him for a fully healthy season. And he did pretty much exactly what I think, if I told you at the beginning of the year, hey, Brandon Lau is going to be healthy for 134 games, and I asked you what you thought his stat line would be, what he did is pretty much, I think, exactly what you would have expected.
Yeah. 256 average, 31 home runs, a 114 WRC plus, 1.7 F4, which does put him fifth on the team amongst position players in F4. So top five player on the team, although 1.7 is being your fifth best player in F4. More about the team than it does about Brandon Lau. But like a really good hitting season. The reason his WAR is so low is because, and we'll talk about it, he was abysmal at second base this year. He might be cooked defensively, but let's start with the hitting.
And the hitting was basically what we've come to expect from Brandon Lau. It is, he's going to hit a lot of home runs. He's not going to walk very much. He's going to strike out a good amount. When he gets a hold of the baseball, it's going to go a long way. The 31 home runs for him are the most since that big season in 2021. A big part of that was that he was relatively healthy all year long, played 134 games, which is, you know, again, the most since that 2021 season. Personally, for me, I got a great deal of enjoyment from this season. I enjoyed seeing him out there every day. He looked like his old self behind, you know, at least at the dish. And I was just really happy to see him get a fully healthy season and to, you know, be able to put some of those injury woes behind him, at least for a year. I personally got a lot of enjoyment out of him.
Yeah, he was great. And I don't want to sound like a Debbie Downer. I think this might be his last dance as a good baseball player. I think he might be an average baseball player in years to come.
Are you talking about him as a complete player, as an average?
Yeah, but I think it's because his bat speed's been going down and down.
Yeah.
And he managed to make it work this year. But his walk percentage has taken a drastic downward spiral. So he's actually hit this year career high. Well, not a career high, but close, like one of his highest batting averages.
Yeah.
Since 2020. But it's a career low on base percentage.
Yeah.
So his game has changed a little bit. In terms of his bat speed is lower, but he's getting more hits, which is good. He's not walking as much and he's chasing more.
Yeah, and I think that's actually something that's sort of underrated about him in previous incarnations of him as a player, that he was actually walking a good bit in previous years. Like, there were years where he was walking 11 and 10%, and he's now – and he walked 6.9% last year. That is quite bad. That is like Chandler Simpson level bad. That's what that is.
Yeah, and that's like – Jake Mangum level. That's why a 256 average and 30 home runs is only a 115 WRC plus.
Yeah.
Which isn't that high for what you would look at those base stats.
Yeah. And here's my question and I don't have any sort of answer to this, because this is all sort of like, this is all theory and just ideas. Is it possible for Brandon Lau to take a look around and say, okay, we have Jonathan Aranda now. We have Junior Caminero now. And we do not need necessarily for me to hit 31 home runs. If I could be healthy and hit 100, you know, play 130 games and hit, you know, 20 home runs, but somehow get that walk percentage up a little bit, find a way to get that WRC plus back up to like 120, through getting on base a little bit more, do you think that he has that in him?
To use a term you use, I think Brandon Lau's swing and miss, swing for the fences thing is a feature, not a bug. I think that's the player that he is. That's why the Rays brought him in, because he swings really hard at everything. But the problem is, it's taken him a bit longer now. So
yeah,
there were struggles with velocity for Bilal this year. And I don't think that they're going to get better.
Yeah.
So I don't think so. I think he could definitely be more selective.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean.
Yeah, I think he can be more. I think he can be more selective, but I don't think he's going to try and take anything off to cut down the swing and miss.
Yes, I agree, and I think that's kind of what I'm getting at: is could he get back to a 10% walk rate?
I don't see why not, but I think pitchers are going to. We've talked about this in years past. Brandon Lau was a very feared hitter, so pitchers would often dance around Brandon Lau.
Sure.
Because he was the centerpiece of that Rays lineup in the early 2020s.
Yes.
Now, he's not.
Yes.
I think pitchers are now like, if I just go at this guy and attack him with my best fastball, I've got more of a chance. Yeah. So I think he'll get challenged more, which makes it more difficult for him to even be selective. Because I think pitchers are going to be more aggressive than ever before against him.
Well, I think that's why we saw all the home runs this year, honestly. It's because, like you were saying, you have to worry about Yandy still, obviously, and then Aranda and Junior Caminero asserted themselves. And so I think he was getting a lot more fastballs and missed pitches in the zone than he had been getting in previous years. So I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, again, this is all just like, could this happen? I don't know. But that's kind of like, if I'm trying to create a pathway where Brandon Lau continues to be a valuable player, because obviously the defense is just not good like anymore. I still think he turns a mean double play as well as anybody in Major League Baseball from second base. But the range is just not there. It just isn't. With second base, it's not like you have a fast first baseman either. So you end up having a really slow right side of the infield. And that's not great, because you got a decent amount of ground ball pitchers on this roster. So if you've got a slow first baseman and a slow second baseman, you're going to get if I am a opposing offense, I know if I want to hit a ground ball, like if that's my game, or if I'm a singles guy, hit it that way. Because you got, like, what are the odds that those guys are going to, like, and Aranda's not bad defensively. But again, like, you, like, that could be a weakness that someone could try to exploit if they're out there. So, I don't know that he's, and I think, it's tricky because obviously Yandy is probably your DH. So I'm not exactly sure what the future will hold, for that position, because you've kind of got three guys you really like to have, in a world where you didn't have Yandy or like you had either or Yandy or Bilal, they would be your DH. But since you have both, you kind of then have to put, Bilal back out at second, where he just hasn't been great. So it's an interesting decision. Obviously the Rays have decided to keep him, so they must be okay with the trade-off there. And what he can do defensively with the value that he's providing offensively. It'll be interesting to see if there is any sort of a dip in his offensive value, if the age continues to show, what the Rays' decision will be on keeping him out there, if the defense continues to be bad. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I think this is going to be his last year with the Rays.
It's very possible.
But I think we'll also hear in the offseason about him and Yandy trade rumors.
Oh, yeah, we will.
Because it wouldn't be an off-season or trade deadline without the Rays shopping Yandy Diaz and Brandon Lau. I think they will both stay. I think if they weren't getting moved last off-season or this trade deadline, I don't know why they'd get moved now.
Yes.
But I think this is Brandon Lau's last year.
Yeah. With the Rays. And I think I will say this. Number one, I don't see Brandon Lau and Yandy Diaz both being on the roster to start 2027. I just don't know that I can see that.
No.
Without some sort of, I don't know what would have to happen for that to be the case. And if the Rays are not doing well at the trade deadline, those two are the first to go if we're not doing well. when we get to the trade deadline, which unfortunately, more so than previous years, I can see the pathway to that happening more than I have in previous years. So I'm just going to hope that doesn't happen, because I'd really like at least one more full year to where Brandon can get cemented into second place on the all-time home run leaderboard for the Rays. That's my personal motivation for that. You know, I'd love for him to get two more years and have a go at Longo's all-time record, but it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah, I think, the only thing that I worry about is what's the succession plan for Brandon Lowe. Because if he sucks this year, there's not really a plan B at second base.
I mean, Palacios would probably be that.
Yeah. So I guess
which I would be fine with.
Yeah. And is he the long-term fix at second base as well?
I think Braden Taylor is the long-term fix at second base. That's right, the idea. Okay. But I don't think he is as major league ready this year as we thought he may have been. Just say it that way. Like, I think we thought he might be ready now, and I don't think he is.
No.
So I think 2027, maybe it's Braden Taylor time, or maybe Palacios cements himself into that. But I think there's also a world where, you know, Aranda could do some stretches and get out there at second for a little bit. I don't know that he's that much, it would be that much worse than Brandon Lau, which is unfortunate to say. But I think it's very similar level of production.
Yeah, I see all of that. So Lau is six home runs off Carlos Peña for number two. So he should get that this year. However, he is 104 home runs off Longo. I don't know if he can make that up.
That was more than I thought. I thought he was like 80. Nope, never mind.
There is a huge gap. There's a huge gap. Between, so Longo has 98 home runs on second place.
That's a lot of home runs.
Yeah, so Lau, you're going to get to second place probably. Unfortunately, I don't think you're going to get to the top.
Can you remind me what that number is for Longo?
261 home runs with the Rays.
261. So that means, man, it's just crazy how long he was hitting that many home runs for. Because that would mean that Junior would have to be, it's going to take him, like, even if he performs the level he's been performing, he's got to go for like 7 or 8 years before he's really scaring that number.
Yeah. I mean, he put up 40. In a year. So you can put up 200 in 40 home run seasons.
Yeah.
So
you got that would be generational.
Yeah. You got to get it's possible, but you got to get a wiggle on. Junior actually is currently tied for 20 in the all time Rays home run leaderboard.
Yeah. I think he's going to rise up that ranking very fast.
If he hits 40 more home runs this season, that will move him up to the top 10.
Yeah.
That'll move him past Randy.
That's crazy to think about.
Isn't that crazy?
Because I think we have this memory of Randy hitting all these bombs, but like most of them were hitting the postseason. Like he was kind of a 20 bomb guy in the regular season.
He hit 85 regular season home runs as a Ray. Did Randy, which still puts him 10th.
Still great.
Yandy's at 99. He needs one more home run to get 100 with the Rays.
That'll be fun. He'll do that. Yeah.
So that'll be fun. Crazy that Isak Paredes made it to 13th.
Isak is one of the, like, he's one of the more, he's an interesting what if. Like, he's the most, he's like the most. He's like, nah, there's more interesting what ifs out there. But he's an interesting one. Like, what if they had kept him around and, like, tried to, and, like, made him the succession plan for Bilal?
Right. That could have worked.
It could have, and it would have been nice to have a right-handed power bat last year.
But think about this, Zach. We wouldn't have had Christopher Morel if we didn't do that. So,
man, I mean, I don't want
to. I'm loving looking at this leaderboard because Junior Caminero is 20th. He is currently tied with Logan Morrison and G-Man Choi.
Two absolute Rays legends. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I personally think that G-Man Choi, like, is maybe is he a top 10 Ray? I'm not talking about like how good he was. I'm talking about pure vibes. I think he's a top 10 vibes guy, like, of all time.
Yeah, I definitely see that. The Rays all-time leaderboards are always fun to look at because, like, nobody apart from, like, Crawford, Upton, Longoria stuck around for, like, a really long time.
Yeah.
Zobrist, yeah. So it's fun to look at, like, some crazy statistics. Like, shout out Desmond Jennings for being in the top five triples of all time for the Rays.
I think that's another off-season episode is top 10 Rays vibe guys of all time.
Oh, that's a good one. I mean, currently Desmond Jennings sits above Caminero on the home run leaderboard as well.
Vibes.
Shout out Desmond Jennings. We thought you were going to be the next Carl Crawford, and you absolutely were not.
Super were not, but that's okay.
what would you give Brandon Lau?
This might surprise you. I would give him a B for this season.
I was going to give him a B for this season.
Like, he was good. He hit home runs. That's what you want Brandon Lau to do. But obviously, the falling off in the bat speed and the continual degradation of his, you know, decision making, you know, from a you know swing decision perspective, is a little bit disappointing. And it does tamper just a little bit what was otherwise a great season for him. And so it's still a B. He's still playing really, really well. But it was not the second coming of 2021 like I would have hoped.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a B. He was a productive player.
Yes.
And did more good for the team than not. Did we give Yandy a grade?
I believe we gave him an A.
I would give him an A.
I don't know if we did or not. I feel like we did. But if we did, I would give him an A. He gets an A. He's also an A.
That's a pretty good grade card. We're giving Junior the A+ at third base. We're giving our DH an A. We're giving our first baseman an A. We have given our second baseman a B. We'll talk about shortstop another time.
we wanted to keep this a very positive episode. So we've left it to that. We will get to shortstop and the infield also rans another time.
Yeah, I think that's for the best. So we can all keep on moving up.
It is.
Yeah. I can't wait to hopefully see some news this offseason. Maybe the Rays make a trade. Maybe we sign a guy. Or at least get some interest in a guy. Right now, we're not even in the rumor mill for anyone right now, which can be quite slow.
Yeah. There's not much rumor mill going on at all right now.
No. I think the Rays...
A couple trades.
We're in the mix probably for an innings eater type starting pitcher. There's a little bit of smoke to a potential Zach Littell reunion, but then there's also
Eflin, like all those guys.
Chris Paddock is a guy that we've not had before, but is in that kind of genre.
Yeah.
I mean, Littell back would be great. I would love that.
I'd be really happy.
I don't want Eflin back.
No, I know you. Is Eflin your most hated former Ray?
Aubrey Huff.
That's different. That's a different category.
He's probably my least favorite former Ray that's an active player.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Don't follow up. That's all I'm going to say. This is definitely the most positive position group I think that we have. I think we're going to talk about starting pitching next week. So stay tuned for that, and we hope you do stay tuned for that. Maybe we'll have some more news to talk about next week, maybe not, but we're definitely going to be talking about starting pitching next week, so we hope you join us for that. And the easiest way to know when we're going to be live for that is to drop a follow on social medias or drop a subscribe over on YouTube. You'll know when we're going live and know when you can be a part of the show, so we hope that you do that. It would be a huge favor to us. It's free. Doesn't sign you up for anything other than to know when we go live, so If you have enjoyed the show so far, please do that. We're going to be talking about starting pitching next week, and that's also a positive one. But I think it's very clear that the strength of this team is in the infield.
100%. And it's a good place to start building a good team again.
Yeah. So and still a lot of questions there on what this team can become, but it's definitely going to start there.
Definitely. Now, we'll see what the rest of the offseason brings.
We will. And whatever the rest of this offseason brings, we're going to be here talking Rays baseball the entire time. We hope that you'll join us. We hope that there's some excitement somewhere in there. But whether there is or isn't, the whole offseason long, it's always going to be Rays up.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.